Right? I'm really happy to be back. And as I actually said, I've been a part of Christian ministries, 18, 20 years. That's when the Lord sent our senior pastor, Tim Brooks, down to Honduras on a scouting trip back in November of 1999. My family and I had already been living there for about 3 years, and God brought us together. And my goodness, some great things have been happening because of the similar mindset. The ministry here at Christian Ministries, Missouri, the ministry there in Arkansas, Hot Springs, and so forth. And I know that we're not the only ministries with this mindset and so forth, but it sure is good to be a part of another group of people that have the same mindset. And that's what has brought us together and kept us together and keep us working on the same focus, which is serving God faithfully and being about what we're called and created to do. Serve God. Serve God. I mean, y'all get some great teaching here, but I'm just going to shoot out a line real quick and I won't charge for it. You know, God created the universe and the heavens and the heavenly hosts before he created the earth and us. And he did all of that and had no real need to create us other than have fellowship like from others like himself. We are made, we're created in God's image and likeness. He already had everything all set up in heaven. There was worship to him and for him and all, but it was created that way. It was just like a robot. It was set up and that's just the way it was. Okay, but he created you and I and every human being like himself with a mind and a heart to decide what we want to do. And of course, God is love, God is righteousness, and he created us to have righteous fellowship, righteous companionship. And that's why we're created. We know the story. Sin came in, Satan was there, and of course, way back before the earth was created, he got into rebellion and was kicked out of heaven. God lost a whole host of worshipers. And then, of course, desiring fellowship as he equals as he is. Did you know that we are like God? We're created as his image and his likeness. And that was one of the temptations that Satan came against Adam with. For God know that if you eat of this tree, you will be like him. We were already like him. Satan's a liar from the beginning. We're already like God. Okay, but sin came into the picture and distorted it. But the purpose of your and my creation is because we are like God and we fellowship with him. But because we live in a fallen world where Satan has deceived so many of God's creation, part of your job and mine is to help see that lost creation reconciled to God the Father. But man, have we ever been sidetracked as a church, as believers? Okay. I want to tell y'all something from the bottom of my heart. I'm going to say a little bit about myself and a little bit about the ministry, and then I want to go on with the word. But just let me finish saying this. I'm North American, born in New York, raised in South Carolina, farm boy. Came to Christ. Well, he brought me to himself when I was 19 years old, and that was just about a couple of years ago. But anyway, and he has used me in missions ministry for the last 37 years in Nicaragua, Honduras, Belize, Paraguay, Argentina. My wife is Nicaraguan, and we have two daughters. Our oldest daughter was born here in the U.S. and serving still in the Navy. I'll get to spend time with her next week. Just came back from Saudi Arabia and all of that. Weapons specialist, U.S. whatever, Eisenhower, aircraft carrier. So I'm looking forward to spending time with her next week. And our youngest daughter, who was born in Honduras, to my wife is Nicaraguan, so our youngest daughter has a Nicaragua passport, Honduras, because she was born there in U.S. because of her dad. But she is studying and finishing, getting education in Nicaragua at the time. So yes, we are empty nesters, and we aren't used to it because in the last 20 years, there's only been about 90 times that we've closed the doors on our house and there was no one else living with us. But that's another story. But what I want to say is this. When I turned the TV off the night of the elections. I was very, very sad. And I pretty much decided that I am not going back to the U.S. too much anymore. I was really, really sad and quite disappointed in America for what we North Americans had allowed or have allowed our country to become like. And I'm being honest. This is not made up, and he isn't paying me a thing, so I ain't talking for him. I'm talking for the Lord. I am proud of you folks. When I woke up that morning and expected to hear, and no offense to the folks that was going to vote or voted for Hillary, but when I woke up that morning, fully expect, and my mindset was, you know, Hillary wins, I am not going back to the U.S. We are done for. That was literally my mindset. I don't want to go back to America because I was just sure that was going to happen. And I woke up and turned on the TV and found out that President Donald Trump won. I was a joy in me like if it was Christmas time and I had gotten a new toy. I mean, literally, folks, you don't know what it's like to serve God in another country and have the citizens of that country mock Americans for being so smart and so rich and yet so ignorant that they can't even figure out what sex they are, how to raise their kids, you don't know what it's like to hear the ridicule of other countries as they talk about Americans. I thought our country was all but gone, but I realized that morning when they said that Donald Trump was the president, I mean, immediately, right there, I said, the church woke up. Hallelujah. That is what I said. The church woke up. And I am proud of you. But I want to tell you something. Now that you wait, I'm reframing my tongue. You know, I work with street kids and gang members, and I got a little bit of French mixed in there, you know. Oh, Lord, kick yourselves in gear. And let's take advantage of the opportunity that God has given you. Let's not just be about church and nice Christian folks. Speak to your country. Be involved. You know, when God created Adam, he set him on the garden. God made Adam responsible for everything that happened on the earth. We men, we human beings, children of God, you're still responsible for everything that happens on the earth. You're still responsible. So let's just not keep God and church within these four walls. All right? You drive a tractor, bulldozer, you own a bulldozing company. It might be like Chico or Jeff, concrete company. I don't know what. But you do jobs for different people, business, and even government. Don't make no bones about who you are. You on the school board or something, the public school or whatever, don't make no bones about what you believe that kids should study and not study. Huh? How much of Americans want prayer in school? 80% or more. And why ain't we got it? Because the Christians got quiet and they're afraid of speaking up when that's what we're here for. So if you're a light, you're created to be a light and you ain't being a light, and then? So what? You know, I happen to like a little salt on my tomatoes. I don't do salt very much at all, but on cucumbers and tomatoes, I like a little salt. But if I put it up there and it ain't salted, what's good is it doing? And Jesus said, if the salt has lost its savor, what's it good for? If the light is under a basket, what's it good for? Folks, as Christians, we are the light. We have the answer. We got another opportunity in America. Let's not waste the opportunity because I don't think we'll have another one like this. If you get quiet, young people, if you don't speak up and get proud, happy about your faith, and then what are the schools going to be like for your kids? You're 15, you're 16, and it's tough. What about when you get married and have kids? If you don't make a difference, who's going to make it? I can't do it. You know, I mean, I'm not that old, but I'm older than you are. So I can't go into your classroom and tell kids about standing up for Jesus, but you can. You know, on your jobs. And you know what I mean. Okay, so what? Well, really, is that you know, have you questioned whether that's your place or not? Well, what are you on earth for then? Sometimes Christians get so heavenly minded till they're no earthly good. And that's not the purpose. If God wanted you in heaven as soon as you got saved, it would have been like, boop, beam me up, Scotty. It's not that way. We are here for a purpose. Yeah. We're the one, we're the keepers of God's garden. Okay? I am proud of you. I don't know how that came across, like if I was fussing or what, but I'm proud of America again. Okay, let's make America great again. I am proud of America again. Oh, yes. But anyway, let's go on. I already said Alvin Anderson and wife and two kids, two girls, in which I'm very proud of. And I don't have any slides this time. Both Pastor Tim and myself and Ashley just felt like, okay, let's just let the slides go this time. And he was being Ashley up here. He was being used by the Lord, but he was being Ashley and took up some of my time, right? But, I mean, he had to share the vision and so forth. So I don't know really how much I got, but we can blame it on him if I go over, right? But anyway, you know. But how many of y'all have been to Honduras? Let me see. Okay, I know we got quite a few. All right. Well, pictures and slides, I mean, you know, just get with some of them, and I know that they'll be happy to share them with you. I love to share. I love to give you an update because you folks are standing with us in prayer and in finances and in visits also. Chico will be coming down, the 20th of next month to check out some things that we're wanting to do out on a piece of property that we have out of the city. You know, we have three churches in the city, 1.5 million people. We've got three congregations. And then south of the city and then southeast, we have a church, a congregation in each one of those areas. And the one that's out in the south part of the country, about 2 hours out, is where we're wanting to build a home for the boys that have became Christians, that have been in the gangs or have came from a street life, and they're believers now. They're about to get out of jail, but they cannot come back to their homes in the city because of crimes that they've committed and people that they've, you know, the mafia really wants to get rid of no one. You know, for most of them, you know, the only way out is feet first. But we've got several of them that have become Christians and have been extortionist for the mafia, storing the money in their houses and take away the mattress and put the money there and put your sheet over it. Boys and girls that have been involved in the mafia and that type of lifestyle and just so many different things. But again, some of the other ones that have been there can tell you more about what we're doing. We're continuing to do that, and it's growing. I mean, can you imagine? You know, you look forward to your kids to grow, and you look forward to people coming to the Lord. But we've got a growing number of teenagers coming to the Lord whom have gotten out of jail. And let me just say, in Honduras, a minor can never be sentenced for more than 8 years, no matter what he or she has done. Hesser is now 23. He did 6 years and 9 months for a triple murder. MS-13 gang member, there were three teenage girls, two 16-year-old, one 15-year-old, that constantly broke the rules, and he was their executioner, sent to execute them, and he slit their throats. 16 years old. Michelle was raped when she was 10 and a half years old, full of hate. Born to a 15-year-old mother who gave her away when she was born to her sister, or she was raised by her aunt, who was 18 at the time. Raped, sexually abused, as we say up here. I just kind of speak raw because of living down there. And full of hate and wanted to take the guy out that abused her because he was strutting around the city like, you know, a peacock, you know, 27 years old, studying to be some big stuff in the university. And as she mentioned that on the sidewalk, as her and a bunch of kids were sitting in the hood, the ghetto, or as you know it, one of the kids in the gang says, "I can take him out for you." And she says, "I want him taken out, but I want to do it myself." MS gang members taught her to shoot, handle a 9mm, and she took the guy out at 11 years old. She did it with such bravery and, well, what is the right word for a cool way of knocking somebody out? So the gangs hired her. She signed to be a contract killer at 11 years old. Beautiful 11-year-old. Between the ages of 11 to 15, she took out 27 people. These are kids that we work with, okay? Now, don't let this deter you from coming to visit us, okay? You actually, you see, because when these kids come to the Lord, then they really need a new life. And for them to get over that sin and accept the fact that God will forgive them, they need to be shown that they are people worthy of forgiveness in spite of, okay? And that's what your visits help us to instill in them, whether they're on the streets or in the jails or in the impoverished neighborhoods. Your visits with us help instill in them, I must be worth something for those folks to come here and visit with us. Okay? Not just to the jail, but even just to the country. Okay? So as we minister and as we see people like Michelle, like Hesser, come to the Lord. And again, Hesser just got him out in November. I actually get people out of jail, and I get a lot of slack for that. I went over to the restroom, and I saw your October newsletter that I wrote on the bulletin board, and it talked about joy in heaven over one sinner that repents. But there ain't too much joy on earth when we lead somebody like Hesser to the Lord. He came to the Lord 6 years ago, okay? Why did I sign? The judge and the lawyer were ready to let him out. Because of his Christian testimony, this guy has literally stood, and his testimony as a believer has been validated by MS-13 gang members and 18th Street gang members getting ready to clash. And he has been the one to stand in the middle and said, guys, don't do this. Jesus loves you. And for him to still be alive after such things, because his testimony in the Lord as a believer is legitimate. They believe him. He was a murderer. And not just those three murders, but several others. He was the executor. Okay? And I mean, yeah, I don't have his picture other than on my cell phone, but what I'm trying to say is when you get kids, young people, he's now 23. I got him out of jail because he's doing probation, yeah. But why would the judges and lawyers let me have him as they've done with many others? Because I need more workers. There are a bunch of guys in the adult prison that are killing one another and dying without Jesus. I got Hesser out of one adult prison to send him and Jeffrey to the, you know Jeffrey, the brick, to send those two guys to the other adult prison to preach to them. That's why I get them out. Because we need to preach the gospel. And I am sold out that if you're alive and in Christ, it is to serve others, not yourself. Yeah, eat, sleep, drink, have nice beds, nice cars. You don't want to have to push your car every time you go down the road, so get a good one. I'm all for that. All right? But your purpose is to serve. Your purpose is not to allow America and kids to get to the point where they don't know what sex they are. It's not to let Christian marriages get, and the divorce rate in Christian marriages get the same as heathens. You're not here for that. Kick yourselves in gear and be about your Father's business, not just in these four walls. You know what? When I flew into Houston, there was a shooting in Fort Lauderdale, right? The day before I flew out, so they closed the Fort Lauderdale airport. I couldn't fly in at Fort Lauderdale, so they flew me in at Houston. I was supposed to get an American flight to Dallas and then from there. But I flew in at Houston, then got a bus from Houston to Hot Springs to get to the conference that we went to. I didn't realize it the whole time, well, until later on in the trip. There was a lot of Latins on the bus, Mexicans, Hondurans, Guatemalans, and so forth. The young lady that was sitting behind me heard me on the phone speaking in Spanish. Later on, she asked me if I could translate for her at the Marshall, Texas bus stop. She knew she was on the wrong bus. And while we went into the station for that 15-minute stop, I was translating. Okay? She was supposed to have gotten on the bus to go from Houston to Mobile. She ended up getting on the one coming to Shreveport. So I noticed her, and I said, "Where are you from?" "Honduras." I said, "I know that. What city in Honduras?" How did I know that she was from Honduras? 20 to 22 years old, a baby boy, 18 to 24 months. How did I know she was from Honduras? She had the rosary around her neck. 18th Street gang member. Going to her common law husband who fled the country and lives in Wilmington, North Carolina. 18th Street gang member who was sought after by his gang because he had broke the rules and he knew a lot of information that the mafia wanted him dead. Fled to where? America. And that's just one. I know many, many Honduran gang members that have fled to the U.S. and they're not Christians. Okay? So do I find my work in Honduras irrelevant to U.S. North American life? No, I don't. Okay? No, I don't. I would rather that they come as believers sharing the gospel as rather than fugitives who are running from the law and the mafia and other gang members there. But you have them here by the dozens, by the thousands. And I could go on just with this, but let me talk. Because, I mean, I'm doing one thing down there to further the kingdom, and you guys got a job up here to further the kingdom, to make America great again. I like that slogan. All right? I love America. But to keep it that way, to keep the schools, to keep kids, you know, we take Bibles to the prisons all the time in America, but we can't take them to the schools. So after they mess up, become criminals, then you can give them the Bible. All right? Does that sound right? How many of you kids would like to have your Bible in school? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you like to be able to bow your head in the cafeteria and pray without being mocked and picked at? Wouldn't you love it that if it was a common thing to give thanks to God for the water you drink? America is the only country where you can be out watering your lawn and turn the hose up and it's safe enough to drink. What do you think Jesus meant when he said in Matthew 6:31, take no thought for what you will eat, what you will drink, or what you will wear? How many of you actually worry about what you're going to drink? You won't worry about what you're going to drink as long as you're in America, but every time a team comes to Honduras, is the water safe to drink? So why are you worried about it down there? That means we need to worry about it, but you don't. Aren't you happy for that? Do you thank God that you've got water safe enough to drink? You don't worry about what you're going to drink. So why don't you just get on about God's business? You're in a position where you can serve God without a lot less worrying. You know, go to somebody's house. Can I have a glass of water? Or they just offer you, Lord, bless this water. Kill every bug in it and sanctify it. You don't have to worry about that. I don't anymore. I just drink it. I'm just messing with you. But I'm going to get to the message in a minute. I'm just waiting for it to get 12 o'clock. But anyway, so I can blame it on Ashley. I don't know. Anyway, y'all want to invite me back again. Let me just go ahead and share what I got for you. So in the work of the ministry, I'm going to talk to you kind of like you're some of the young people or the older people that have came to the Lord and your staff. And I'm going to just talk to you and encourage you, okay? All right? You might sound like I'm whipping you, but no. You see, I live there. I walk among the gang members. I go to the jails. I walk in, and there's 126 boys from the 18th Street gang between 13 to 18 years old, and most of them are there for at least double or more murders, okay? We walk in among the 57 girls that are in jail, and they're there for every reason. But I'm so proud of Yancy, Wendy, Erica, Melissa, four of the girls who recently, of the nine girls who recently gave their lives to the Lord. I spoke to the vice president of the 18th Street gang before I left to clarify their Christian faith so that they would be left alone. And by the way, that vice president of the 18th Street gang named his son Alvin in honor of me. okay? Now, so I'm working with a bunch of guys like Hester, who comes out of jail, like Brenda, who was a gang member, now 41 years old, seven kids, who has cancer, and her husband, who was a gang member also, backslid and walked out on her. 41 years old. And Brenda is a part of the ministry in the streets, and she is down. She's out. Financially, it's difficult in battling cancer, ovarian cancer. I spoke to Bessie this morning, who was at the hospital with her 38-year-old mother. The mother, Bessie is the oldest of eight kids, but the mother has been pregnant 11 times. As her mother was about to get operated for cancer, she's not a Christian. But she's already said, if I don't survive, I want you to do this. Bessie is 22 and has raised her siblings a life of sexual abuse ever since she was 8 years old. And when she became a believer and herself was released from jail for stealing, walking home two blocks from her grandparents' house, she was picked up by the police, taken out of town and sexually abused in the back seat of the truck by the police, and can still smile and serve God. She's one of our staff people. Now, when she gets down, our Brenda, our Hester, because he can't get a job, our Raul, who was the extortionist for the mafia, now a believer, and the difficulties, we got work to do in the ministry, folks. I'm talking to my staff now, okay? You're my staff. We got work to do in the ministry. Brenda, you're dealing with cancer. Bessie, you're dealing with this. Hester, Raul, Marco Tulio, Jeffrey, whoever, you're dealing with this, but listen to me to the word this morning. I will try to be brief, no promises, but I'm going to shorten it up as much as I can, so just follow with me. I want you to, you'll make a promise that you'll read this chapter when you get home sometime tonight or early in the morning whenever you do your devotion. Make a promise, because if you don't make a promise, I'm going to read it all of chapter, okay, Mark chapter 6. I'm going to shorten it up really short, but you'll read it. You promise? I heard four people. You're going to read it? I heard 10 people. I know. I'm going to trust all of you. Okay. I'm going to just start by paraphrasing. This story, if you begin in verse 14, talks about John the Baptist being beheaded. Now, Jesus is already in the ministry, and he's already got workers. He's already got staff. He's already got believers. And you're the believers, you're the staff, you're the Lord's staff, you're God's workers in the kingdom. You said, I'm just a member here, I fellowship here. Are you a believer? Then you're a light. Are you a believer? You're salt, okay? Don't tell me, no, I'm not staff here. You are God's staff in this earth, okay? So, John the Baptist gets beheaded. The disciples are with him, and this is a hard blow. John the Baptist, why does he get beheaded? For preaching, for standing up for right. It's not right for you to have your brother's wife. It's called adultery. How many of you are persecuted for standing up and preaching the gospel? Are you kids in school? Are you getting bullied and mocked and stuff because you stand up for what's right? Well, if you don't, even though it's difficult, if you don't do it, the world will take over and America will not be great. That's what makes us different. Americans, the pilgrims came here looking for a place for what? To do whatever they want, to go whatever bathroom they want to? No, to freely serve God. If you don't want to freely serve God, look for another country, okay? So if you're here and you're a Christian and you say, I want to freely serve God, make sure that your kids and your grandkids can freely serve God. Yeah. Are you with me? Yeah. There's lots of space in Cuba, China, Honduras, if you don't want to freely serve God. Huh? You can still get your nice stuff if you just want to be corrupt. If you're not going to serve God, well, just go ahead and do it anyway. Yeah. But if you're going to serve God, let's serve God. John the Baptist lost his head, and I don't mean it to be humorous, because he was preaching the gospel. Some 14-year-old girl wrapped in pieces of cloth under the instructions of her mother danced before the king, taking off pieces of cloth until she ended up dancing nude. It so pleased the king that he vowed to give her half of his kingdom, whatever she asked for. She gets the counsel from her mother to go and take the head off of the man of God. you are men and women of God, and there is persecution coming against you. And the disciples saw that, and they were getting weary. They were getting sad. You've been fighting a long time, staff. You just came from a life of drugs and gangs and whatever. And I don't know, you might be coming from marriage difficulties. You might be coming from a hard upbringing by parents. You might be coming right now, some of you as kids or teenagers may have parents that are not serving God, and they really shouldn't have had kids, but God have you here, and you're the target of their anger or their frustration. You're the one that reminds your mother of that abusive father. You're the one that your parents rejected you at every turn. You're the one that's in the middle of a marriage crisis, and you're tired. You're discouraged. The future doesn't look right. You lost the business. Carlos just closed the bread business, the bakery business Friday. One of our workers, faithful workers. You know Carlos, Carlito, as we call him. You guys remember Carlos? He just closed his business. Struggling. He's the husband for Bessie, who was the oldest of the 8 kids. And since the mother lives on the streets and drugs out and everything, they've struggled to raise her siblings. And he had to close his business. I don't know where you are. And I don't know if you just got out of jail or not. I don't know if you've committed a murder that nobody ever found out about, if you've had an abortion that nobody knows about, and you're struggling even as a believer, and things are hard, but you're called. And Jesus just goes on in verse 21, and this is, I don't understand. I got some issues to talk about with the Lord, if you can believe it's worth it when I get there. But it says in verse 21, New American NIV, it says, finally, the opportunity came. This is when King Herod had the opportunity to take out John the Baptist. And look at the way that the scripture says, finally, the opportunity came. It's almost like the enemy is waiting for you. And finally, I got the opportunity to go after Ashley, go after his finances, go after his marriage, after his kids, after his parents, after the country. Huh? Finally, I got the opportunity to go after Alvin, go after Jeff, And he comes at you to destroy you. And then, of course, you read the story, okay, this party went on and so forth. And at verse 30, verse 29, the disciples of John, it says, on hearing this, John's disciples came and took his body and laid it in a tomb. Then they went to Jesus and his disciples. And you know what Jesus told them? Come with me. In verse 31, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. This has been hard. It's been difficult. Now, that's what Jesus said. And this is the first time Jesus speaks in the midst of all of this situation. And what does he do? You just come through that. You just came through the death of a loved one. Whatever your situation may be. Okay? And he says, come apart and get some rest. And that's what you really need. The disciples are, yes, Lord, thank you. Because you see, the scripture says here in verse 32, and they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place, but many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got to where they were going ahead of them. Okay? Let me back up. Verse 31. Jesus said to come apart, right? But this is what it was. It says that, verse 31, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat. Okay, busy, ministry, serving, trying to be a good dad, trying to be a good mom, trying to be a good son, trying to be a good student. And it's hard. Things are going against you. The enemy finally got his chance to attack you. And people, you're having to ministry. You got all of this against you. Raul can't get a job. Hester has people looking for him. Brenda facing cancer, going in for the second surgery. Yes, I've got 2 women right now that are about to go through surgery in these weeks for ovarian cancer. Okay? And one of them is, again, Brenda. She's been serving with us for 16 years. Okay? So you've got all of this coming at you. You haven't even had a chance to breathe or to eat. Literally, many of my people, Mario and Cynthia. Mario is a hard worker. He will unload a vegetable truck. He will unload a truckload of cement. Whenever he can find work, he does it. When I was listening to Pastor Tim and even Ashley, and he talk about loving church and coming and being here, you know why many of my people don't come to church regularly? They don't have the 40 cents to pay the bus. They don't have the 40 cents that it takes to pay the city bus to get to church. Or they must make a decision. We have four services a week, okay? Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday mornings. They all want to be there every service because church is what we are about, serving God, gathering, and strengthening one another. You might think that's a lot. The early church did it every day. Every day. All right, so Mario and Cynthia have to decide what 2 days or one day they're going to be able to afford to go to church. This is not an issue whether they don't want to or not. So some of my people, it's not that they haven't had a chance to eat. They haven't had anything to eat. But you know what, Mario? You're called, buddy. You're not going to go out and steal. You're not going to go back and rob people like you used to. You're not going to do it. You're going to stand up. You're going to show a Christian witness in the face of a hungry stomach with a wife and a daughter. I've given them money on several occasions for them to take their daughter to the doctor. So they're facing issues. Jesus knows it. Come apart and rest. So while they're going to their resting spot, the people see them and they come around on foot. And when you get to that resting spot, finally I can get some rest. When you land, when you get there, the Bible says here in verse 34, Jesus landed and saw a large crowd. He had compassion on them, and then he told his disciples that he looked at them like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them. Okay, now is when we're beginning to get into some issues in our Christian faith. Lord, I've been serving you. I've been under persecution. I haven't even had a chance to eat. The ministry has been difficult. This call as being a Christian has been difficult. You know, you're the last to be chosen for a new position on your work because of your Christian faith. You won't compromise in school, so you're the last one to be picked in basketball, football, and other things. Now, Lord, you begin to tell the Lord, they're out there. It's late. Verse 35. By this time, it was late in the day. So his disciples came to him and started telling him what to do. They told him, this is a solitary place. Send the people away. They started to tell Jesus what to do. Mistake. Mistake. Jesus knows your situation. Lord, why didn't you give me another spouse? Lord, why don't you give me another job? Lord, why didn't you give me other parents? Lord, why didn't you do one of my questions is, Lord, why'd you make life so hard on Mary, you know, your mother? Because when you sent the angel Gabriel to her to say that you're going to have a child, why didn't you just tell her to go to Bethlehem, you know, to Bethlehem right then? Why did you wait till the woman was 8.5 months pregnant and put her on a donkey for 55 miles to get to this place where there was not any room in the hotels, and she had to give birth to your son in a stable, in a barn? Couldn't you have treated your servant, your chosen servant, better than that? But he didn't. And you and I are wondering, why do we have it so hard? We're called to serve God just like Mary. He didn't spare her any pain and agony. But we want now, God, this is enough. Why don't you just send these people away? Why don't you just give me a break, Lord? What does Jesus do? He tells them, you give them to eat. They check it out. We got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And I'm going to hurry it up because it's already after 12. Maybe I can get away with this because I'm only here once a year. Bear with me. All right. So you know the story. They pick up the breadcrumbs. And it is obviously a miracle. God has done a miracle in America, and I want you to take note. God did a miracle in multiplying the fish and loaves. He ministered to those 5,000 men. And I always say if there are 5,000 men, then there must have been about 5,000 women, at least, okay? Because generally there's more women in church than the men are, uh-huh? And each mother, let's just say that she had two kids with her. So how many people we got there? More than 20,000, wouldn't you think? Obviously, it was a miracle. Obviously, the election, past election, was a miracle. Now, do you think the disciples would have learned? No. Jesus sends the, he tells them, go away into the boat to the other side. I'll catch up with you while I send the crowd away. You got to read the story. I'll close my Bible, I think. He sends them away, and he goes up to the mountain. He dismissed the people, goes up to the mountain, and pray. When it was very late in the evening, Jesus stood on the mountaintop, and I want to read this part, because it says, verse 46. After leaving them, he went into the mountain to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oar because the wind was against them. They were still having it rough at Jesus' instructions. Jesus knew the wind was coming, but he sent them into that knowing. And he is standing on the mountaintop after he just got done praying, and he is seeing them in the middle of the lake straining, giving it all they got to keep their marriage together, giving it all they got to stand in their faith, giving it all they've got to keep the suicidal thoughts from coming in, giving it all they've got to not go get that abortion, or not get involved in drugs, or yield to your boyfriend or your girlfriend's wishes that's not a Christian. He sees the struggles that they're going to. In fact, he sent them on their way. They were still tired. They hadn't got over John the Baptist's death. They hadn't got over being so tired nor to eat from the people that were coming and going. Maybe they ate a couple pieces of fish or bread. But they were tired. They were struggling, and they were serving God. Brenda, I know you're struggling. I got to talk to Brenda like this. I got to talk to the rest of them. But we can't give up. God knows where you are, honey. She's 41, but I mean, I hug her. She calls me Papi Alvin. You know, I hug on Raul. I hug on the others, the boys, the girls. You know, I know that you're being taught. I know that you're about to go back to court for a retrial. You've been a believer for 5 years, but there's a retrial on that murder charge that you did several years ago. I know. But if you go to jail, you will go to jail preaching the gospel. That's what I tell my people. You've got to maintain the light. You are called. There's no going back. But when you get to the point where you start trying to tell God, now, God, you need to send these people away because I'm tired. God, you need to do this. Lord, let's negotiate. We got one, you know, what do you want me to do? Go work 8 months? To get enough money to feed all these people? Can't you be realistic, Lord? I'm trying to serve you. Help me out. Making a deal or telling God what to do. Okay, Jesus goes into their situation. Remember, folks, no matter where you are, he's got his eyes on you. And he called you. And the scripture says he will never give us more than what we're able to bear. He will never give you more than what you're able to bear. Never. Hang in. Press on. But he goes out to them walking, and it's the fourth watch of the morning, around 4 o'clock, when he catches up to them. And they're petrified with fear. Jesus gets in the boat, and immediately things calm. How many of you like it when Jesus gets in your boat? Calms the situation. But you know what? In verse 51, then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves because their hearts were hardened. What is it about the loaves that the Bible is saying here? They did not understand about the loaves. They failed to recognize the miracle that Jesus did. They just totally ignored because they were wrapped up in telling God what he should do. They missed the miracle. Don't miss the miracle that God has done in our country with the president. Don't miss the opportunity and the miracle that God has done that your mate is still in the house with you. All right? I don't know what your situation is, but I'm telling you, we got to keep going. And we can't keep going if we're going to tell God what to do. I noticed you mentioned about the seniors or the elders and so forth in the white hair. That's why I cut mine all the time. It's whiter than yours. So I tried, as we would say, dodge the bullet. I just cut it off. But you know, one of the things when you get older, and you might be able to vouch with me, brother, you know by experience what to do because you've been around a long time. And it's easier for us older to try to get to tell God, this is what you ought to do. We get in more trouble than the youngers many times, okay? Because we, you know, you've been a believer for quite a while. Don't get there, Josh. None of you ever get there, okay? Well, Lord, this is what I feel like you should do, Lord. You should have just sent Mary on down to Bethlehem as soon as you told her about she was going to get pregnant. Don't you think that would have been wiser, Lord? He has his purposes to be fulfilled in what he does and what he allows in your life. Don't miss the miracle because your heart gets hard. Don't get a hard heart because of the cancer, Brenda. Don't get a hard heart because Oscar walked out on you. God knows where you are. Serve him. Now that's hard. She's got cancer. She's got 7 kids. 5 of them are still in the house. And her husband that walked out on her. That's difficult. And what, you think God don't know that? Does God expect her then to go lie, steal, cheat, and kill? No. What does God expect you to do, young man? You to do, young woman, in the midst of your hardship? Don't go negotiating with God. And don't get a hard heart.